Chapter 16. In the glowing darkness, I could make out the silhouette of the strange, silo-like building at the edge of the warehouse district. I wasn't sure how to get to it. I turned down a dark street. I didn't know if this Clementine girl lived in the entire silo, or if it was divided into apartments, or what. It seemed like a strange place to live, one way or another. This area was deserted. A few cars sat on the side of the road, but I saw no movement or life. As I crested a small hill, I could see I-10 in the distance, and unmoving lights dotted the interstate. After a few dead ends and going the wrong way on several one-way streets, I found my way to the entrance of the tall, stucco silo sitting just south of a large, empty warehouse with broken windows. The tall building looked abandoned. It sat ominously behind a tall, wrought iron fence with an open gate. If the building had windows, I couldn't see them. A metal gate stood amongst the tall, dead weeds. I wondered if the twins had been talking about a different place. Then I saw the satellite dish on the side of the building. I stopped the car, and I could hear the distant hum of an engine. A generator. Maybe she was home after all. I looked at the car's clock. Almost 4:30 a.m. I grabbed the duffel bag and walked through the gate to the entrance. Just as I was about to knock, the door swung open. It swung outwardly, surprising me, and I had to jump back. I stared into the twin barrels of a shotgun. The massively pregnant woman stepped out and pushed the double barrels against my chest.
"Want to see if your bulletproof vest can stop a pair of 12-gauge shells?"
she asked. She had a thick, southern-fried accent. I remembered that voice from the Halloween party, thinking she should have been in a Gone with the Wind getup. Behind her, I could see a dark, curving staircase. Light glowed from the higher level, and the sound of several mewling and growling cats emanated from within.
"Clementine?"
I said in surprise. I dropped the duffel bag, raised my hands, and talked fast.
"My name is Adam. I'm a friend of Royce and Randy. We met at the Halloween party. You were dressed as a badger, I was a dog. The twins asked me to come here."
"What's the square root of 5,184? Answer, or I'll blow you clear back to your girly car."
"Oh, crap.
Are you fucking kidding me? How the hell am I supposed to do that in my head?"
"That's the wrong answer. It's 82.
I didn't say anything. She took another step forward. I took a step back.
"Say it."
"Say what?"
"Say the square root of 5,184 is 82.
"Jesus. Take it easy. The square root of 5,184 is 82.
"That's a lie. The answer is 72, not 82.
I should have known someone who would date a guy with two heads would be batshit crazy.
"I swear to God, if you fucking kill me after the night I've had, I'll come back as a ghost and strangle you and your cats to death."
She lowered the gun.
"You're not one of them. That was a test. They can do phenomenal calculations in their head, even after they've been detached. They can't stand incorrect math problems. They also know ghosts can't strangle people or cats. Come on in, Adam. I know who you are."
My hands shook as I picked up the bag and followed her up the narrow and steep stairs. A poster of a horse hung on the wall as I climbed. When I'd last seen her, she was in a full-body badger suit, and I hadn't noticed she was pregnant. I do remember Niff looking hard at her for a bit, but I just thought it was because she was making out with some dude while the party raged all around her. Now that I was thinking about it, what was she doing with another guy if she was supposedly dating Royce and Randy? Clementine wasn't unattractive, but she wasn't a swimsuit model either. Not that swimsuit models are usually about to blow pregnant. She had dirty blonde hair pulled back into a haphazard ponytail and that tan, leathery skin you see a lot on sciencey chicks who spend tons of time outdoors. She wore stretch pants and a shirt with three wolves howling at the moon, extended over her pregnant stomach.
"This is a bizarre house," I said absently, looking up. The interior of the building had been converted into a giant home. Two stories of lofts ringed the tall ceiling of the silo. Her AC bill had to be massive. We came to the top of the stairs. She pointed me to an old tan couch against the wall. I sat down and took in the room before me. Royce had called her place an evil lair. I could see why. The diameter of the room wasn't that large, but it was filled with animal cages. They stacked three high in most places, and every single one contained an animal. Cats, mostly, but I saw a couple small dogs, a squirrel, and a few guinea pigs. Three Asian-style room dividers stood opposite of where I sat, and heavy, bright lights hung from the rising stairs, shining down on whatever was back there. Another divider covered what looked like an otherwise open bathroom. A small oven and an industrial-sized double-door refrigerator sat nearby. Every animal in every cage was going apeshit. The whole place smelled like the zoo, and it sounded like two zoos at the same time. The animals all scratched, clawed, and chewed at their cages. The round, concave interior ceiling was painted with an image I'd seen before. A smiling dude hanging upside down by one leg from a tree. Ah, I had seen it on a tarot card. The Hanged Man. I couldn't see above to the top third floor, but I assumed that's where she slept. The second floor loft had been converted into a nursery. A Noah's Ark theme was painted onto the walls around the crib, changing table, and recliner. An animal mobile hung from the loft above. I felt guilty seeing that. Clementine sat next to me. She leaned the shotgun across the ottoman.
A gift from R&R,
she said of the gun. She waved at the animal cages.
They're not normally this loud. The cats and dogs usually run free. You want some lemonade? Something harder?
I could use a real drink, but I needed my senses about me. No, thank you. I had to raise my voice to be heard over the animal's din. I paused. Look, Clementine, I gotta tell you something.
You know, they never told you about me because I asked them not to. Not just you, I mean, everyone. We kept our relationship secret. It's not because I wasn't important.
I never said you weren't important. With everything going on, I hadn't had time to think too much about it.
At the Halloween party?
She continued. She cradled her stomach with both hands.
That guy on the couch, the gladiator, Tim. R&R picked him out. He was going to be the baby's father.
Wait. What? Over the noise, I wasn't sure I heard.
Tim and I were getting married. Or we were. It was the twins' idea.
I didn't understand. But I could see it was important to her that I know. She was clearly uncomfortable and felt like she had to explain herself. They're dead. Royce and Randy. They're both dead.
Are they dead? Or are they within the creature?
They're dead. Really dead.
Well?
She said, rearranging herself on the couch.
Well.
I lifted the heavy duffel bag, and I placed it on the cushion between us. They wanted me to bring you this. She unzipped the bag and peered inside.
They called me, you know, just before the phones went out. They wanted to come get me. I told them not to. Told them I would take care of myself.
Her lower lip quivered as she talked. Having to shout the words made everything even more awkward than it already was. She pulled the gas mask from the bag and set it aside. She retrieved the smaller bag and dropped it heavily on the ottoman. Out of nowhere, she produced a huge Rambo knife and used it to cut the zip tie to unlock the zipper. From the small bag, she pulled a single gold brick. She had to use both hands to get it out.
Holy shit! Is that real?
She nodded.
A little more than 27 pounds of solid gold.
No wonder the bag was so heavy.
What? How much is that worth?
It depends on today's value of gold, but I guess it's a fair bit more than $1 million. Probably more after tonight. R&R have been worried about the U.S. currency collapsing, so they've been putting their money into gold and bitcoins. I didn't know they had this just sitting around.
Damn, I said. I had no idea they had that sort of money. I mean, I guess selling guns could be profitable. Plus, they made some serious bank from being on television, but holy cow. This was more money than I'd ever seen in one place at one time in my life. Clementine pulled something else from the bag. A stuffed elephant. She placed it down next to the gold bar. And she stared at it for a long time.
Tell me. Tell me everything.
I told her, starting with the roller derby. I told her about the stadium, about going to the twins for help, and about how they wanted to come to her for help. I told her how they died. I continued, talking about getting captured by the military. I even told her about Nif and that tug at my chest, pulling me toward the grinder. She sat quietly as I talked, staring up to the loft with the crib and clutching onto the stuffed elephant. She squeezed it so hard her knuckles turned white. After a moment, she stood.
Follow me.
She dropped the stuffed animal and walked behind the divider with the bright lights. I followed. Behind the screen and under the fast food warming lights lay a dead, naked man. An elderly black man strapped to a table. His chest was peeled open, like in the movies when they're giving somebody a heart transplant. Oh, and he was headless. His head sat upside down on another table in a clear plastic salad bowl. His large, bulging eyes stared at me, as if he were still alive. On a third table, next to the man, lay a small, pissed-off dog, strapped down. It wore a black muzzle, and it growled and snapped as we approached. The whole area smelled like Lysol and shit. Well, I said, taking it in. I looked over my shoulder, memorizing the path toward the exit. This is pretty fucked up. Yep.
You said you can feel the creature.
Clementine said. She leaned against the table with the severed head, pushing aside a big microscope connected to the computer with cables.
I feel it too. I was on my way to campus when it happened. I was meeting up with Tim after the game. I got there in time to see that monster crawl out of the stadium.
She nodded toward the man.
This guy, apparently, had been attached to the thing for hardly a couple minutes. He tried to steal my truck. He kept apologizing as I fought with him. He said he had to get back. I stabbed him in the chest with my knife.
What's up with the dog?
Lieutenant Starbark, Tim's puggle. I had her with me. She's normally the most gentle, submissive dog you'll ever know. But right now, she's more manic than the others. It's how I knew Tim was ensnared. She can feel him.
She looked at me.
I can feel it too.
She tapped her chest.
Right here.
I want to get her back. I was hoping you could tell me how. She shook her head.
The closer you get to that thing, the stronger that feeling will be. You'll end up like this dog.
But have you learned anything? Anything that will help me? She nodded.
Take a look in that microscope.
I looked through the dual eye holes. A bunch of pulsing tributaries filled the round scope like a lightning-filled sky. I don't know what I'm looking at. She pushed the microscope aside and hit a few keys on the keyboard. Several numbers on a 3D graph popped up. She motioned at the headless corpse on the table.
You were looking at this guy's skin. Your nervous system takes up a lot of real estate in your body. But this guy here is overpacked with neurons, the wires of the system. When I say overpacked, I mean every square millimeter of space inside of him is filled.
So the twins were right. They said it connects to the nervous system and hacks the brain.
That's exactly what it does. It first takes over the existing system, that much is clear. And in a matter of moments, it appears to fill the body with a secondary parasitic nervous system that's networked into the central brain.
But how can it grow so fast? It barely touches someone and bam, they stop moving.
I don't know how the nerves grow so fast. The aliens engineered it that way, and with time, I'll figure it out. As for connecting so fast, that I have figured out.
Aliens? I wasn't going to go there. I remembered the twins had said she was a bit whacked out, and it had cost her the job at the university. A couple clicks of the mouse and she showed me another chart that looked like complete gobbledygook to me. I could tell she was meant to be a teacher by the way she reverted into information mode. I wondered if she felt vindicated, even just a little bit, by the appearance of the monster.
A square inch of a normal person's skin has over 1,000 nerve endings. All it takes is a single nerve to come into contact with a signal from the monster's system, and a person's network is hacked, as you call it, at the speed of light. After the connection immobilizes the host, the nerve cells shore up the connection point, and the secondary system invades the body, growing alongside the existing nervous system. All this takes place in a fraction of a second, allowing the monster to grow exponentially when it encounters a large crowd.
She pointed a pen at a section of ripped skin on the upside-down human head.
The connection is so strong, the part that disconnects usually is the area around where the nerves are attached, but not the direct connection point. That's why all the involuntary disconnects, the C2s, they're calling them, tend to have a limb or other chunk of their body missing. The connection point can change, too, all in an instant. They may look like they're walking up the side of the creature like a fly on a wall, but the moment their hands and feet touch, they're physically attached for that 1 second.
She held up a glass jar of pinkish goo that looked like a bit of brain.
This was inside of him,
she said, pointing at the open chest cavity of the man.
It's a neural junction, like a repeater. Some large dinosaurs had them in their pelvises to help move the lower half of their body. If this guy was at the game, and I think he was because he had a U of A shirt on, then this grew inside of his body in less than 5 minutes. With this, in theory, he could still be controlled even if he was otherwise dead.
I told her about seeing headless corpses crawling the outside of the creature, of how the C1s brought their dead back to the monster, but ignored the unaffected dead. Clementine nodded.
That makes sense. The system needs to be alive or pre-wired for it to be able to take over. But it sounds like the dead still need physical contact with the central parasite to work. At least for now.
I looked at the gooey pink nerve bundle in the jar. That was inside of Nif? Just getting her away wouldn't be enough if part of it went with her. If an entire alien brain lived within her, how could I ever save her? What about all these assholes who are running around now, fighting for the monster? They're detached. And what about this? I pounded on my chest. How is it calling to me? How does it know who I am?
When the system takes over the body, it starts with the brain. My hypothesis, and it's only that, is that taking over a brain takes a little bit longer. But once it does, the person who used to be is gone forever. The new self is immersed into the communal brain. It integrates with your existing brain when it's outside the hive, but it stops using your original nervous system. The C2s are only partway there. The C1s are fully transformed.
Fuck. Like the Borg from Star Trek.
Sorta. Furthermore, I believe that when they're physically attached, each node has both send and receive access. So, someone that gets snatched up will learn everything about everybody else in the network. It's like they're all sharing one giant brain, and it gets stronger and smarter every time they add someone else. It's why they can do the fast calculations. It's why the whole thing will look like it's moving in one direction and then suddenly veer off in another. It's because it just picked up someone and learned something new.
Wait. How did you learn about this stuff? Can't be from this dude on the table. You said you killed him right away. She pointed at the small TV sitting in the room. It was turned off.
Satellite still works. They phone interviewed Dr. Clarence Ingalls, a bigwig researcher at UMC, before we all lost phone reception. They took in a wave of the injured after the attack on the stadium, and he noted the calculations, inability to lie about math equations, and ability to psychically receive messages. Since then, others have noted the intense, almost instinctual pull people have toward the creature. At first, only those with close connections to the ensnared feel it.
She flipped on the TV. It showed a scene from the stadium from the point of view of the camera on the field. I looked away.
But now, all animals within a certain radius are being pulled in. I'm afraid it's going to start in on humans, too. And that radius is going to get bigger and bigger.
How can I save her? I asked. Clementine looked at me for a long moment.
R&R were right about you.
What do you mean?
Adam, you can't save her. At least I don't know how. Even if she is alive, even if you manage to get her away, she's been transformed in such a fashion that she'll never be the same. She's no longer your wife.
Fear pulled at me. We don't know that for sure. I have to try. I realized the animals in the room had calmed somewhat, but the feeling in my chest was stronger. It's coming this way. The news now showed a large, crashed military cargo plane burning in a field. The headline underneath, shot down.
We'll need to shield you.
It took me a moment to realize she was saying she would help. Really? She looked around the room.
With the right supplies and the right clothes, we could probably protect you from being ensnared. If you wear something that completely covers you, the hive's nerve endings won't find purchase. Still, I don't know how to defend you from bombs or from the mental pull it has on you, or from being squashed like a bug.
I felt like an asshole asking, but I asked anyway. One of the twins told me you sleep with something on your head to protect you from alien brainwaves. She nodded.
A velostatin lead-lined helmet. It doesn't work in this case. I've already tried it.
Then I'll just have to fight it. And avoid getting shot.
And blown up. And burned. And then what happens after you get close to the monster? You gonna ask nicely, pretty please, would you let my wife go?
The television now featured a blurry cell phone video of the grinder as it scuttled down the road toward the airport. The timestamp said it was about 20 minutes after it hit Arizona Stadium. The creature took the form of a massive sideways walking crab. The video zoomed in on a group of three obviously dead bodies, including a boy no older than 8. The bodies fell off the monster, and a tentacle swiftly snatched them back up. The video followed the three corpses as they lay motionless on the top of the beast. After a moment, all three twitched and then climbed off in opposite directions.
I know how desperate and stupid this is.
All right, then. We gotta get you a dry suit, socks, and something to protect your head.
She grabbed her keys off the counter.
We need to go now.
No, just help me figure out what I need and I'll get it alone.
She narrowed her eyes.
Just because I'm pregnant doesn't mean I can't help.
It's not that. Look, Randy, before he died, he made me promise that I'd talk you into leaving the city. He said you wouldn't go.
Damn straight I'm not leaving. If I leave, who's going to take care of my animals?
No one is going to take care of them if they nuke Tucson. They'll die. You'll die.
I don't think they'll nuke. And if they do, we'll have warning.
I shook my head. They may have promised they'd warn us, but if I've learned anything in the past few hours, it's that the military is getting their asses handed to them. They're not going to warn us or wait for us to evacuate, not when that thing can read our minds. It could happen at any moment. She didn't respond.
Clementine, I don't know you, but I know Randy and Royce liked you a whole lot. You were very important to them. And I don't know what sort of deal you had going with this Tim guy, but I do know the twins, my friends, cared about you and that baby enough to sacrifice their lives to come help you. I know your animals are important, but you're all that baby has. Please get out of town as quickly as you can.
They were dying.
What?
Royce and Randy. Their body couldn't handle it anymore, and it was slowly shutting down on them. They had to get dialysis 3 times a week. Their liver was shot, and their lungs could no longer handle the workload. They had 1 year, maybe 2, to live. That's why they wanted someone else to raise their baby. Tim. He went to school with them, and they knew he liked me. They knew he would be a good father.
Tears streamed down her face. It made sense then. I remembered a conversation I'd had with Randy and Royce about 6 months ago, not long after Niff's hospital stay. They'd asked me about my father.
When your dad died, Royce had asked, did you remember mostly the good things or the bad things?
My dad had been dead for a few years, and I still thought about him all the time. While I had plenty of decent memories, the bad outweighed the good by about 1 bajillion to 1.
The bad things, mostly. But my dad was an asshole.
That's what I thought.
But more than anything, I remember visiting him the night before he died. We sat and talked for hours.
We talked more that night than we ever had. I hated seeing him dying like that. And why he died. That fucked me up quite a bit. So, despite everything, I remember the sadness I felt more than anything. He was an asshole. But I miss him all the time. I feel cheated that he was gone too soon.
That was the end of it. Clementine seemed to be wavering. I pressed on. The twins may have been dying, but that doesn't change what they felt or how they acted when it came to you. This baby is all they have left in this world. Now that they're gone, it's the only mark that they've made on the future. That did it.
I can go to their parents' house. It's in Douglas.
A massive relief washed over me. Their folks are nice people. They'll keep you safe as long as it takes.
Okay. Okay.
She produced a yellow legal pad and pen.
But first, let's get your shit figured out.